Our lesson this morning is entitled, Satan, Seven Sinful Suggestions for You. But they apply to all of us, whether we're young or not. Satan, Seven Sinful Suggestions for You. The scripture reading that was read to us in 1 Corinthians 10:13 lets us know that there is not a temptation out there that is one that cannot be overcome. But Satan is going to put the suggestion out there time and time again. And many of us will fall to those temptations. But we need to be warned about some of those sinful suggestions that he puts out there. We know Satan is seeking someone to devour. The Bible also tells us if we will resist him, he will flee from us. Satan, even though he's a lion, he's a cowardly lion. He wants to find easy prey. He doesn't want a hard battle. He wants something easy, and he knows that he can find it somewhere out there. So if we will fight against him, he will run away and hide. We're going to look at seven things that Satan says, and like Simon says, but in this case, Satan says, and he may use one of your friends, or a classmate, or for those of us who are older, a co-worker, or a friend as well, maybe even a family member, to try to get these ideas across to us. First of all, Satan says, one drink won't hurt you. One drink won't hurt you. God says differently. In Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 1, the proverb writer tells us not to be deceived. He says there, wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. We become foolish if we are deceived into drinking wine or other strong drink. Proverbs 23:23, Solomon warns his son to listen to the truth. He says, buy the truth and sell it not, also wisdom and instruction and understanding. See, Satan says one drink won't hurt you. But Solomon, who had seen his fair share of drinking, knew differently. He says there in Proverbs 23, beginning in verse 29, who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contention? Who has babbling? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eye? And then he answers that with those questions. They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine, look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last, it bites like a serpent, and stings like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. See, Solomon talks about the addictive nature of alcohol. And one drink is all it takes to get started down that road. Down that road to the point where you have sorrow and woe and where you babble and you have wounds without cause. Where you say, they beat me, but I didn't feel it. But you wake up the next morning with bruises and pains all over, and you don't know what happened. You got in a fight because you were drunk. You're sick from the hangover afterwards, and sick from the alcohol the night before. And yet, if you continue in that pattern, even through all of those woes, all of that suffering, all of that misery, you ask yourself, when will I wake up so I can go and do it again? That's what an addiction is. That's a dangerous thing. Satan says one drink won't hurt you. that one drink is never the only drink. There's always another one right past it. It's kind of like the Lay's potato chips. You can't eat just one, or you can't drink just one. When somebody starts down that path, it's harder and harder the further down that path they go to turn away from it again. We need to listen to the truth. We need to not listen to Satan's lies. He says one drink won't hurt you, but it will. And it can. It has killed. And then Satan says, if you loved me, you would. And this is a favorite of teenagers who are trying to convince their boyfriends or girlfriends to engage in some sort of sexual misconduct, to do something sexually that they both know they shouldn't do, but they try to use love as an excuse for doing it. If you loved me, you would. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 13 through 18 teaches us that our body is for the Lord. Here Paul says, meat for the belly and the belly for meat, but God shall destroy both it and them. Now the body is not for fornication, that's sex, outside of marriage, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And God has both raised up the Lord, and will also raise us up by his own power. Know ye not that your bodies are the members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them the members of an harlot? And a harlot, of course, is a prostitute. God forbid. What? Know ye not that he which is joined to an harlot is one body? For two, saith he, shall be one flesh. But he that is joined unto the Lord is one spirit. Flee fornication. That's that sexual activity outside of marriage again. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. God warns us that sexual sins are serious sins. It's not a matter of lust. What's more, we know you can't overcome. Genesis 39, verses 7 through 9. Joseph was sorely tempted by Potiphar's wife. She continually approached him, saying, come, go to bed with me. And finally, when she caught him alone in the house, she grabbed him to try to get him to go to bed with her. And he ran away from her, leaving his coat behind him. He knew he had to get out of there because it was a dangerous situation. Unfortunately, many times young people see just how far they can go. Just how close can we get without actually going all the way? And then they say, well, we went that far, let's go the rest of the way. And if you love me, you would. I love you so much. I want you, and you want me, and we need to go ahead and show our love for each other. True love. The Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians 13, true love is patience. True love will wait. True love does not behave itself unseemly. Verse 5 says, doesn't seek her own. In other words, it's not selfish. It doesn't think only about her own selfish desires, but thinks about what consequences would happen if we were to follow through with this action. Is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. If you love me, you would do it, Satan says, and the response that God gives is, if you love me, you wouldn't ask. We don't ask people that we love to do things that are sinful. That's not what love does. Love doesn't think evil and doesn't rejoice in iniquity. And then third, Satan says, everybody is doing it. Everybody is doing it. Says that about drugs. Says that about sexual activity. Says that about alcohol. Says that about going to see R-rated movies that have things in them that aren't appropriate for Christians. For that matter, lots of TV movies have things in them that aren't appropriate for Christians. It's getting to the point where some of the G-rated movies have things in them that aren't appropriate for Christians. But he says that, well, everybody else is doing it. It's okay. Well, what about everybody is doing it? What does Jesus say about that in Matthew chapter 7? Verses 13 and 14, he says, enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leads to life, and few there be that find it. Yeah, everybody's doing it. Well, Jesus says what everybody's doing is going down the road to destruction. That's what everybody's doing. And if that's what you want to do, then you know how to go. You follow the crowd. But if you want to go somewhere different, if you want to go to life, you're going to have to find that. And it's not by following the crowd. You're going to have to go against the grain and against the flow. Revelation 21 and 8 tells us what the final destination is for those who are involved in all of these kinds of things. Revelation 21 and verse 8, he says, but the fearful and the unbelieving, the abominable, murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers, that even includes those who experiment with drugs, any kind of sorcery involves drug use, and idolaters, the idolatry often involves lots of other sinful activities like alcohol, drugs, and sexual activity. And all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Everybody's doing it. Well, that was the same thing that they told Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when it came to bowing down to that idol. Everybody else is doing it. You're the only ones that aren't doing it. But they continued to not do it. And here they shouldn't. We have to have that kind of dedication and courage. And that brings us to our next point. Fourth, Satan says, you're just chicken. You're just scared. You're just a wimp. You just can't handle it. You're a coward. But we just discovered, we just saw, that it takes more courage to be the only one standing against something than it does to do what everybody else is doing. That's where true courage is. Proverbs chapter 1 and verses 10 through 14. We need to not be influenced by any kind of enticement, whether it's name calling or anything else. Verse 10, Solomon says, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse. Solomon says, don't you believe it. Don't fall for it. Now what are those folks going to say? Well, what's wrong? You scared? You're chicken? You afraid to get caught? What are you afraid of? You're just scared. You're a little scaredy cat. We need not be influenced by name calling or by any other enticement. Said, my son, if sinners entice thee, there are lots of different ways that sinners try to entice you. And one of the ways, as odd as it seems, that they try to entice you to do what they're doing is by belittling you, by being derogatory toward you. Now, is that a good way to get somebody to do something? By calling them names? And yet so many times they call us names. They said I was a chicken if I didn't do it. They said I was a scaredy cat. They call me all sorts of worse names that I can't repeat. They call me names because I wouldn't do it. And so I gave in and I went and did it. Why? If they already think that badly of you, do you really think that going with them is going to change their opinion of you? Then they're just going to know that they can manipulate you by calling you names. Anytime they want to. There's nothing wrong with being smart enough to know when to be afraid. There are some things that we should be chicken of. There are a lot of things that God has warned us will bring death and destruction, and if we've got enough sense, we'll know it's okay to stay away from those things. We need to be more afraid of the judgment of God than we are of the judgment of those so-called friends, who once again obviously don't love us, because if they did, they would never be trying to entice us to do evil. And then fifth, Satan says, you only live once. And he's right. You only live once. The only problem is he's missed the point. Since we only live once, we better be careful to make the most of it. That means not going out and doing something stupid to ruin our lives before it's begun. It means not frying our brains on drugs so that by the time we're 20 we can't put together a sentence. It means not drinking so much alcohol that by the time we're 30 our liver is shut down and we have to have a liver transplant because we can't live anymore. That means not going out and doing something illegal and getting ourselves thrown in prison for 20 or 30 years of our life. I mean, knowing that since we only live once, we better live it right, because Hebrews 9:27 lets us know that after we finish living that life, there is one thing yet to come. It is appointed unto men once to die, but after this, the judgment. We only live once, and we better live it right, because after we get done, we're going to be judged for the deeds that we've done in this life. We see also that following this path leads to destruction and a ruined life. Mark 7, verses 21 through 23. Jesus says, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, theft, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, and foolishness. All these things come from within and defile the man. They defile the man. How many young people are dying of AIDS now because they gave in to sexual temptation? How many young people committed suicide because they got so involved with drugs and alcohol or with other problems brought on by sinfulness in this world that they just couldn't stand to live anymore? The story is told of the young girl who was teased because she couldn't go out and party with her so-called friend. And she responded by telling him, when you wake up tomorrow morning, you'll wonder where you've been. You'll wonder why you're hurting. You'll wonder what you've done. You'll wonder if you're pregnant. You'll wonder if you've gotten some sexually transmitted disease. But when I wake up tomorrow morning, I'll know where I've been. I'll know what I've done. And I'll be able to enjoy the day. I won't have a hangover. I won't have the down that comes after the high from drugs. I'll know that I can enjoy the day and that I can live it in good conscience and without having to worry about whether I'm going to get some horrible disease. Now, which one was really fun? Going out and bringing all of those woes and worries upon themselves by all of the activities that they did? I knew a lot of young people that did some of those very things and had some of those results come to them because they thought it would be fun, but it wasn't fun for very long. When sin gets full grown, it brings death. And sin can grow up in a hurry before you realize. What are the rewards of wild living? Luke 15, verses 11 through 21 and verse 30 as well tell the story of the prodigal son all through that chapter. I want to look at just a couple of verses. The man had two sons. The younger said, Father, give me the portion of good that falls to me. Not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when it had all been spent, there arose a mighty famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Where were his friends then? Those friends that had partied with him and had a good time spending his money, where were they when he got hungry and needed a place to live? Why, they were off ruining somebody else's fortune. He went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. You ever see people sitting wasted on the side of the road, begging money? People who have ruined their health, ruined any chance they had at getting a job, because they have ruined every ability that they had. And all they can do is sit, smoke their cigarette, beg money to buy alcohol, hoping maybe every once in a while to get something to eat. We've got to watch out. The rewards of wild living are not good rewards. How many people who at one time were famous, wealthy, athletes, movie stars, businessmen, you name it, are now poverty-stricken, living on the streets, homeless, because they wasted those millions of dollars in riotous living? We need to be sure that we don't follow those examples. This young man was fortunate in that he realized that he could go back to his father. He could go back home. Not everyone always can. Sometimes people ruin their lives and they have nowhere left to turn. They can't go back home. It's too late. But then next we see that Satan says, it's just a little bit of harmless fun. Just a little bit of harmless mischief. But Isaiah 59, 3 through 8, Isaiah gives an example of this kind of mischief. He says, for your hands are defiled with blood, and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue hath muttered perverseness. None calleth for justice, nor any pleadeth for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. See, that's what mischief does. Mischief brings forth it. It might start out as a little bit of harmless fun, but it doesn't stay that way for long. Pretty quickly, it turns into something that's no longer harmless. Proverbs chapter 6 and verses 16 through 19. Solomon says there are seven things that are an abomination unto the Lord in these verses. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands to shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imagination, and feet that be swift in running to mischief. How many times? Oh, sneak out of your room tonight after your parents are in bed. We'll go out and have some fun. Oh, come on. Tell your parents you're going to be at so-and-so's house, but we'll go somewhere else. Go ahead and tell your parents that it's okay because my mom and dad will be there when they really won't. Just a little bit of mischief. Very dangerous and deadly path to start down. And then seven, Satan says, nobody will ever know. It'll be our secret. How many times has somebody said that? Oh, go ahead and do it. Nobody will know? Well, the fact of the matter is there are three people who will know in every one of those circumstances. you into doing it. They'll know, and they'll use it against you at every opportunity they have. Secondly, you'll know, and it will haunt your conscience if you still have one left for the rest of your life or until you can get it made right, if that's possible. Sometimes it's not possible to make it right. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you can correct the things that you've done. But it will haunt you for the rest of your life. And then God will know. And since God is the only one who really has any power when it comes to judging us or sending us either to heaven or to hell, that's probably the most important person that He always knows. Oh yes, you may fool your parents, your grandparents, aunts or uncles. You may fool the church. You may fool all of those people. They may never know. And in fact, I dare say that there are a lot of children who have done things and who have gone through the rest of their lives, and the people closest to them never knew. But God did. And they did. And their confederates, their friends, so-called, that were involved in it with them knew. There have been cases where young people had done something, and after a number of years, one of them that was involved couldn't stand the guilt anymore and came forward and admitted to the crimes that they had committed when they were young. Ephesians 5, 11 and 12 says, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret." It's a shame just to even talk about some of those things. It's hard. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't need to talk about them under certain circumstances. I'm talking about some of those things here to you today. He says, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them." And that's what we're doing here today. We're trying to reprove them. It's a shame to be thinking about doing some of these things, much less following through with it. It's a shame just to think about doing it, just to talk about doing it. We need to watch out. If it's something that must be done in secret, it's something that shouldn't be done. Everything that we can do as Christians is something that we should be able to do openly. Not secretively. Openly. The whole reason they're trying to hide these things is because they know that it will meet disapproval if it is found out. That's why they want to make sure that nobody will ever know. When was the last time somebody said, "Come on, let's go to church"? Nobody will ever know. Well, I know certainly there are places where Christians are persecuted, and they may not be able to be just as open about it as we are. But still, it's not something to be ashamed of. When was the last time somebody said, "Go ahead and tell your parents the truth"? Nobody will ever know. Oh, no. See, whenever somebody says, "Nobody will ever know," well, he keeps it a secret. It'll just be between us. That almost always indicates that they're wanting you to do something that should never have been done in the first place. We know God sees it all. Proverbs 15 and verse 3 is, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place." We know that God knows all things. 1 John 3:20 says, "God is greater than our heart and knoweth all things." And then, of course, we know that God is the one who will judge us. Ecclesiastes 12, 13, and 14 says, "The conclusion of the whole matter, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil." Oh, Satan has a lot of tricks up his sleeve. This isn't all of them, but this is seven of the suggestions that Satan makes to try to entice us into doing something that we shouldn't. And 32 and verse 23 says, but if you will not do so, he's talking about doing what is right. He says, but if you will not do what is right, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Whether it's in this life or whether it's in judgment, your sin will find you out. Don't let Satan play you. Don't let him have that satisfaction. He wants nothing more than to see your life ruined and destroyed before it gets started. Don't let it happen. You don't have to. There are always ways of escape. God has promised that He will provide that. If you're here this morning and you have a need to respond to the invitation for whatever reason, whether it be an initial obedience to the gospel or whether it be as a Christian who has allowed Satan to trick them into some of these kinds of things, allow him to play on your emotions, play on so-called friendships or relationships to get you to do something you shouldn't. Whatever it is, if you have a need to respond, we ask that you do so as we stand.